Times now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beatty. And yes, welcome to a brilliant political podcast from multiple continents.
Yes, indeed. We are broadcasting from, recording from the UK and Australia, and much like us, our president is also out of the country.
Yes, he's been racking up them air miles, bruh.
Yeah, he's taken after his predecessor and enjoying the travel, which is quite interesting. I thought the SADC tours, I understood. I suppose he's staying in Africa, which is, we can say, a good thing. But let's start with the day. Today's the 26th of March.
Yeah, we're recording on the same day for once.
Yay.
We're both on the same day.
That's a good one. Hopefully, Zvinoramba zvakadaro, we keep it like that. Today we're going to speak about our president, his travels. We're also going to speak about the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. And we're going to speak about MDC Coupe. I don't know if that's what we can call it, but
and Tokozanu Coupe.
Yeah, but auntie,
Tokozanu.
Wow! Such disrespect! Shame on you, people.
That's. Amongst another one, I've been waiting for Matigari to release an ED name. I've always found idiots a bit crass and not very creative. The one that I've found that I really liked or I found really funny is ED Amin.
Wow, you guys are... Hey. This propaganda slanderous trail that you are on, please stop it.
And then Kamisa, instead of Chamisa, and Kamisa.
We should also speak about Matigari and his exposés.
Oh, yes, of course. Have you seen that there's a fake one as well?
There is, yes. There's a fake one who doesn't seem to like us.
Yeah, that was so random. I think he was just trying to get noticed.
Perhaps, yeah. But
And now we've given him on the podcast. We've talked about him. Now someone's going to go and look
exactly,
for him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Don't look for him.
They don't even know who he is. Anyway, yes. So our president is currently in Abidjan, in Ivory Coast, attending a forum for African business leaders, I think. I'm not sure what the actual title of the.
It's a CEO forum. The Africa CEO Forum in Abidjan, Shaping the Future of Africa is what it's talking about, the African Economic Agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going off their website. Expert opinion, updates, analysis, the usual indabas. Basically.
Yet another indaba, which is not a bad thing. Indabas are good. It's good to hear people's ideas and what people are saying. The big issue with a lot of these forums is that they have the same sort of people there. So it's middle-aged to old African men. And then your white foreign investors, or you know who they say there's no young people,
or you're Muslim. don't be racist.
No, but it just in general, so you don't have young people attending these things, you don't have women attending these things in terms of the numbers when we're looking at it from a numbers perspective, and they talk amongst themselves and they share all these ideas, but really the people who are supposed to be impacted are not there to share and contribute, or are not there to hear what, you know, all the conversations are about. And then we hear of, you know, deals, and I open quotes when I say that, and all sorts of other, you know, things that they want to do, but the implementation never gets done. So our president has gone to this CEO.
Yeah, so he's there to present his economic recovery project to the African CEOs, and he'll be on a panel with ex-Nigerian President Obasanjo, and I think they're gonna. That's where he's gonna present his plan. And the only other president that's there is the new president of Liberia, the great man himself, George Weah. but yeah, so it's one of those. For the first time, you can ask, should he be there?
Yeah, I honestly perhaps would have sent Chinamasa and guys from the business sector. So round up a bunch of, you know, African business leaders, Zimbabwean business leaders, and sent them along with whatever the plan is, and sent Chinamasa, maybe Mangujka, you know, people who can speak specifically to these issues, and chart out what it is they specifically need in terms of the industry. I think we definitely need to move away from such a centralized system in terms of running the government and the economy. It's great that they want to take control in spearheading the economic reform, but they need to let the market also take a hold. You know, this command style, it hasn't worked in the past, and it's not going to work in the future. So they need to find a new plan, and a new plan, I think, is letting go of the reins slowly but surely, fixing the things in terms of the policies, in terms of the laws, and then letting the market take hold and do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have no, like, I mean, look, I would be the first one to be hard on him about this, and we're in agreement there. He could have sent someone else. He's chosen to go. My one problem is with the strategy as a whole is the president is presenting his plan for economic recovery in Abidjan. Has he actually presented it to Zimbabweans?
That's a good question.
Besides the other endeavors that are closed door, $150 a plate or a ticket per day, meetings in the Meekles, has he or any of his proxies gone on TV or released? And I'm not asking for a manifesto because you're governing, but I don't know if anyone else besides the business community knows what the concrete steps they want to take and then what order they want to take to fix the economy or to fix whatever they're doing. Like,
you see,
go ahead.
This is where the problem then lies, is that we are in an election year and we are months away from an election. So in terms of whatever plan or strategy that there is, I mean, yes, they can come out and say it, but is there enough time to say, oh, we've got a 3-month or a 4-month plan? Obviously not. So I worry in that regard. Obviously, you know, it's important for Zimbabweans to come out and understand, and definitely I think the media should have been pressing them more to get a lot more answers in terms of what the strategies and plans are and what people can expect and also contribute to these things. It's very tricky. I don't know how. I can't quite
Put my finger on right how they're going about it. I mean, not to be a whiny whatever. It's not even that I want to criticize or just for the sake of criticism. I'm saying one of the things that we've had as a problem as a country, particularly the government, is policy consistency. And without a well-articulated or a publicly articulated vision, I don't see how you expect policy consistency across all the ministries, across departments, across everything. And, you know, we've got 3 months until the election, so it's very soon we'll be in electioneering mode, so I'm sure there are going to be, you know, promises coming out. But I just also think that for me is missing. And there's an example I get that's obviously everyone's talking about right now is we might even get into in more detail is the example of the doctors is how, you know, your minister, your line minister, or your two line ministers, I'm assuming it's the Minister of Health and the Minister of Public Social, the paymaster, both step back from the situation. The vice presidents step in, say they've sorted the situation, and the next day the doctors are still, you know, striking, saying, no, nothing was sorted.
Yeah, the doctor strike is something that's been an issue for, or the, no, let me not say the doctor strike, but the doctor's remuneration
pay.
And pay,
yeah.
and their on-call allowances is something that is a recurring issue. Every year, every 2 years, doctors will go on a strike. And a huge problem is, you know, just the amount of money that's allocated to the health ministry, which, if I'm not mistaken, it was increased in this current budget, I think.
Yeah, but I think, but again, I think the... Yeah. I think, I mean, look, it was increased. I don't think that's up for.
No, I'm not saying for, that. Yeah, I'm not saying.
The increase ended up being 75 cents.
I'm not talking about the allowances. I'm talking about just the entire budget. But itself, that budget is not that budget.
Oh no, I off the top of my head, I don't know. To be fair,
that budget allocation is, you know, it's not enough, and you do have a very passive and aloof might be the word, Minister of Health, and he's not somebody who's out there to fight for the doctors, evidently not.
No.
You know, and I understand his frustrations in terms of, you know, I approach finance ministry and ask for more finances and all sorts of things and all the complaints there, but it doesn't seem that he fights for it.
He doesn't.
It seems like, you know, he's the kind of guy who will walk into cabinet and say, "Ava chinamasa, my doctors are kuchema chema, trukumbiro imwe mari," and chinamasa says, "Apana," and then he says, "Ah, okay," and then he goes back, you know, type thing. Like,
and you know, the thing is, like, let's not say it's not enough without context. It's not enough in comparison to, for example, the funding that OPC receives. Compared to, like, you know, for a country that's not in an active war situation, compared to Ministry of Defense funding. So it's not saying, we're not saying we're comparing it with the rest of the world. We're just comparing it within the budget of the country.
Within other ministries as well. It did get increased, and I don't know if it's... I'm not sure. I'd have to check the numbers, but it did go up. So... definitely, and this is something we've been, you know, crying for a long time. There's been people who have asked for change, you know, in the health ministry. The health minister has failed. He's failed the doctors. He's failed patients, and it's gotten to a situation where, you know, that's one position that should have been changed when the new cabinet came into,
and it's unfathomable that it hasn't, because what actual influence in the party does David Paranyatwa have?
You know, for me, it really shouldn't even be about what influence he has within the party. It's just how he's run his ministry and what he's done in terms.
No, of course, but we're a politics podcast. So I'm saying we all know Obed is still in charge because Obed was stealing with the people in Marange there, so he's got files.
You're questioning what leverage does Paranyatwa have?
Yeah, because he was applying the dangers.
Eish. Wow. 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 Okay, I have no idea what leverage he has. Whatever leverage it is, you know,
he's got some power.
He does. And this, perhaps, actually, this is what our journalists should be investigating, because it makes no sense that somebody who's failed the health system should still be there. And, you know, our health system has been failed, and we do need reform in that sector. And this is a priority issue. This should be a priority issue for our head of state as well. He should be sitting down. He should be taking charge. Not be in Abidjan right now. He should be taking charge of finding ways to deal with this crisis.
Yeah.
Actually, to be fair.
That's actually a fair point. Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. And he's been in Zim after a while, this is going, and you know, if your wife has been going around the hospitals and actually had to cancel a trip because of the doctor's strike, and I hope he doesn't, but it seems that's where he's going to go, is that prioritizing foreign investment and the economy, I wouldn't even say the economy, the upper echelons of the economy over the actual day-to-day issues of the population is...
But you see, this is where I think the government needs to look at itself, or rather OPC needs to look at itself and what it's, you know, hoping to achieve. Problem solving should be one of their key issues that they should be dealing with. And when you're talking about outside investment and growing the economy and all these things, you should be able to solve domestic issues and instill confidence in whatever would-be investors that they are. The health sector is a very important sector in any country, in any economy, because you want your citizens to be able to be healthy so that they can go to work and all sorts of things.
Yeah, it's not for even social goods. It's an actual financial... It's actually an economic issue.
If you have
a poor health system, your economy suffers.
It's an economic issue. So in terms of problem solving, if they'd attacked this issue and solved the problem and solved it swiftly, they'd have shown that they are different from previous administrations which have dealt with this same issue and, you know, have always come back to where we are striking 2-3 months later. So I really think... And that this should have been a priority issue, which they failed to prioritize. You know, they're going on these trips, but it and to leave it again in the hands of Parrenya Atwa, somebody who's been dealing with this issue for a long time, and it keeps coming back full circle, shows that, you know, there is a lack of thinking that's going on.
I know he replaced Dokora, but I would have sooner replaced Parrenya Atwa over Dokora, to be fair.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. But
moving back, we sort of digressed because we're meant to come back to this free trade agreement,
the free trade area. Yeah.
But I wanted to put it to you that maybe, in as much as Zimbabwe is attempting to woo the world of investors and foreign capital, do you think maybe OPC right now, particularly through some of their people who are working with them, renowned authors and stuff, are actually being wooed themselves by this life of flying, conferences, talk shops, things like that. I'm saying, Kuti, they've now lost sight of what the initial reason for it was and are now more enjoying the actual process.
As opposed to
the process being merely a means to an end.
I can...
Because we all know the old man, he does like a bit of whiskey. He does like, his
party. 6 months on, 6 months off. He's currently in his wet season.
Where's that from?
No, it's true. He said in the interview, he said that when he was in... when he was still in the army, one of his commanding officers had a rule for them that you could drink one day off, or you could drink 1 week, 1 week off, or you could drink for 1 month, 1 month off. So he picked 6 months. So he goes 6 months on and 6 months off.
So he's currently in his wet season.
He's currently in his wet season. From the 1st of January till the 30th of June is his wet season. Then from July until the end of the year, he's in the dry season.
Yeah, but fair enough. Look, so in Zimbabwe, and I'm not even like, if you know, I've given them a wide berth because I understand the necessity of it, but
no,
I think perhaps maybe he didn't send General Sibusiso Moyo to Abidjan because, you know, he's why wouldn't you want to drink with
SB might be there too, but to answer,
SB by himself. No, SB is in SADC. SB is in Pretoria right now.
Okay, cool. To answer your question, I definitely think that, you know, there is that sort of excitement in terms of the re-engagement process itself, because this is new.
My diplomats event, I'm going to go to the Australian embassy. I'm going to fire them.
Wow. No, but in terms of just the OPC itself, for a very long time, especially when we had pariah status, we'd go to these things and probably, I'm not saying this is what would happen, but we'd pretty much be backbenchers the whole time, you know. You'd be there just to be there with Mugabe, but no one was really engaging. But now all these people have the opportunity to go talk, you know, talk up Zimbabwe, talk about the investment strategies and all these things. And I think it must be very exciting for a lot of the people who'd been there for a long time and were and had lost interest in their job. So in that aspect, I can agree. I think this is a new dimension and it can be very exciting. But again, but it needs to come down to planning and strategy. And this is where, you know, there's a bit of lacking and where they need to assess what it is their goals are and align their strategy to what they want to achieve, or align, you know, how the means to what it is that they want to achieve. Again, we're going to an election, and people increasingly become disillusioned when things don't happen. There was a grace period. They set 100 days for themselves. If they hadn't, I think, you know, they could have pushed it a little further. But that grace period has gone now. You also have a change in the opposition, and the opposition is moving. You know, it's out there, rallies, gaining support. It's got its message. It's tightening up its policies and its ideology and its thinking. It's trying to bring everyone on. So now, where they had the grace period, they now have competition, and they now need to start showing results. And results aren't, you know, the Herald announcing so much money being invested or
signing $4.8 billion deal.
4.2, yeah. Or opening Cremora factories, or, you know, results are.
And where's the corruption? Is it on top?
No, results are actual tangibles in terms of real investors coming in or whatever it is, and actually people going back to work, but also just easing of restrictions and laws and a bit more order within society. So, and also doctors not striking. Those are some of the results. You know, they need to focus their energy there in the next 3 months before the election, because, you know, you don't want to be in Abidjan or in Djibouti whilst the election is taking place, and, you know, all your people, and I say that in quotes, are voting for someone else whilst you are enjoying hors d'oeuvres all over the continent.
Yeah, but talking about the continent, Emerson, whatever else his legacy is going to be, he's going to be going down on being on the right side of history for signing this free trade agreement.
Yes, so last week, it was last week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Last week, 44 African countries signed the Africa Continental Free Trade Area Treaty in Kigali, Rwanda. And, you know, it's the first step in
towards... Quick jab here.
Yeah.
So when you see pictures of Kigali and you see, you know, those ribbon roads and things like that, those highways and everything like that, and then you guys have the audacity to say that's an unrealistic belief when in 1993 Rwanda was... Anyway, never mind. Let's go.
Okay, I'm not going to debate this issue because it's we're going to go back and forth. But yeah. So we have this free trade area treaty that was signed, 44 African countries, and the idea is obviously to set up a free trade area where goods and services can move between countries with no restrictions, no taxes, no levies, that sort of thing. And at the same meeting conference, President of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, also said that we should move towards a singular currency on the continent as well. And obviously, such treaties are the first step to moving towards that. It's a great thing. I support it in principle. I am skeptical and cynical about it in practice, and I don't think it's going to work for multiple reasons. The first is political will. If you look at the first 44 countries out of 53 that belong to the AU signed. So you have 9 countries that didn't sign. Nigeria is one of the ones that didn't.
South Africa.
Did South Africa not sign? I thought they did.
No. Nigeria and South Africa. South Africa. Nigeria didn't sign anything. South Africa signed the declaration but didn't ratify the treaty. They're not full signatories. Neither is Zambia, neither is Namibia, there's quite a list.
Yeah, we were there
and that signed the declaration and we're like, yay, good, but we have to go back and consult with the Guptas and the Beers and the Van der Merwes the White Capital so we know what to do.
But obviously, so that's on the South Africa thing. Nigeria didn't even attend the meeting. President Buhari didn't attend, and one of the things there is they have to consult with their trade unions because Nigeria obviously has one of the biggest economies on the continent, and a free trade area, goods and services moving freely means that people can move freely in terms of looking for jobs, and that creates pressure on their local job market immediately. So these are some of the teething issues that this free trade area is going to suffer.
You broke there, but for some analysts I was reading at, because Obasanjo actually attacked Buhari about this, and apparently a lot of it is not only because of the movement of people for Nigeria. It's also because of the fact that Nigeria would be the biggest market, but they have comparatively a very small manufacturing capacity, so their own industries would struggle, particularly compared to countries like South Africa, Tunisia, Morocco, Egypt, like, you know what I mean?
Yep, no, that's...
So they're afraid if they do sign on to a free trade, their markets become the dumping market because they don't have the energy, their electricity situation sorted out. They're just like every other country, and they don't have their manufacturing sorted out. So South African goods and goods manufactured everywhere else in Africa, particularly South, would be dumped in Nigeria or be primarily sold in Nigeria.
And that's another issue. That's to compound on the list of other issues with political will as well. If you look at regional organizations. SADC has been talking about a free trade area for a very long time. We still don't have one. They've been talking about a single currency for a very long time. We still don't have one. You have countries that haven't ratified a number of the treaties. I have a list somewhere. I need to look it up. But if you look at the DRC, for example, the DRC itself hasn't even ratified the SADC treaty. So it's signed to it, but it hasn't been ratified. So it's one of these things where the DRC is a member of SADC, but if you look at the number of treaties and conventions it's signed and ratified, it's absolutely abysmal. And so you don't go anywhere with countries that are just there. I mean, the DRC joined SADC so that they could protect themselves and get guns and
The Kabilas joined SADC to save themselves.
Yes.
Because I'm not even sure Kabila can speak for the whole of DRC. He doesn't control that country.
Well, the thing is,
his capital there, that's it.
Literally, they joined SADC and then they benefited from the fact that Zimbabwe could send troops to SADC to defend them.
Sorry to digress. Is it true that ED asked for that one pizza that DRC owes us?
I have absolutely no idea. I saw the headlines, but I have absolutely no idea if that's true.
It seems very unlikely, to be fair.
Mm. And another thing, back to this free trade area, whilst I'm also skeptical, is that we don't have manufacturing capacity. We spoke about this in a lot of African countries. And the thing is, why trade is so low is because Africa, we still export a lot of raw materials. And where are you going to be exporting raw copper to on the continent? Because what do you do with it? Which countries process copper? Which countries process platinum and all these sort of things? So until we build up our you know, manufacturing industries and are processing raw materials and producing things, then the trade is going to remain very low. And it's very noble to want to increase it, but we need to sort out the other issues down the line as well. And another point specifically to Zimbabwe is you have things like SI-64, which is in stark contrast to what the free trade area is about. So if you have protectionist policies, you know, which you support and say these grow our industries, that's the argument that the government gave, then it's going to then duplicitous, is that the word?
That is the word. Singapore masters in that.
It's duplicitous to then sign
cut from the school from Sango.
to then sign a free trade area agreement and say, "Kuti, we want free trade area," but at the same time you've got SI-64s on your statutes. So these are some of the political issues around why a free trade area is not going to progress. And in terms of the currency, man, I don't even have to go there. For a unitary currency, you need fiscal discipline. And
leaders, who agrees on what central? What central, where is this banking going to be done?
No.
Before you even get there, you need to have an actual single customary union.
You need... You see, the thing is, for me, the one important thing, and we can take this lesson from Greece and the euro crisis, is that you need countries to agree on how they're going to spend their money. You know, you can't have... We're all going to have this one currency, which means, you know, our credit rating is pretty much going to be the same, which means you can borrow as much or as little as you want. But if you're borrowing to spend on elections, or if you're borrowing to buy shoes and all sorts of things, then it affects, you know,
the to currency. Buy shoes. Yeah, are you assuming Wiginow was the president somehow?
No. But the money comes from the state, ka?
Yeah, no, you know, ultimately... The reason this will fail is the reason why most of the things do fail, and perhaps you can attack me for this, is because the African Union will rubber stamp, the where it's been successful is there have been similar political systems across the board, and right now there's no homogeneous political system across African countries, and until we accept for whatever model we decide to accept, then we will lack that political will. And until people and presidents can be accountable to their own people, they won't be able to be accountable to a body such as the African Union. It's a voluntary organization. So if you have presidents or country or systems of government that can hold their own people in impunity, lowers the trust deficit that you would have in a situation of a monetary union. You use the Greece example, but why it won't work in Africa is simply because how do you lend money to someone who has tendencies that he can just wake up and say, I'm sorry, we're pulling out of this. And the only way, at least from my opinion, the one way you do gain that benefit is by acceding to democratic principles in your country. And I'll use China as an example. It's left out of a lot of things unless it runs them. So China is not part of ASEAN, which is on this part of the world is the biggest organization like SADC, effectively. China is essentially left out of that because it doesn't control it, so it won't be part of it. And the reason it's not part of it is because it doesn't have the same political system. So until we get the politics right, the economics might try and force it, but it's going to be very difficult. It's an uphill battle almost.
I have little faith. I don't think it's going to work. And it's sad because it would be beneficial. For me, I've always said if we can get it right in our regional areas first, then we're well on the way to do it continentally. Africa is too big to come in to be placed in one basket or to have these things happen overnight. We need to sort out SADC, we need to sort out the EAC, we need to sort out, and by sorting out SADC, I mean in a smaller sort of batch. DRC, listen, great country. I think, you know, they've got so much.
They've got beautiful women.
So much going on for them.
Diamonds, wonderful music.
But the biggest problem that they have is their leadership and their politics. And in terms of SADC, we won't go anywhere with the DRC. To be fair, I don't even think that Zimbabwe will take SADC anywhere fast right now.
When the DRC will we go anywhere with the We are forgetting about two military governments in SADC.
Two? Three?
Three at the very minimum.
Angola?
Oh, yeah, Angola. But no, but Dos Santos stepped down.
He did
before he was forced out. So he set a better example than your uncle Bob.
He did, but they have a military man there now.
Yeah, I don't know. Me, I have no problem with military men per se. I have a problem with military men who take power.
Okay, fair enough.
I have some of the best leaders. You know, General Colin Powell is actually one of my personal heroes. You know, but I have no problem with military men per se. I have a problem with. Huh?
Old man, what's Kama? He's a military man. He stepped down.
Kama, you know, I had a massive crush on him when he jumped out of the plane on on Top Gear, if you remember that. But
Kama's a...
But hey guys, let's talk about this. Kama Murungu, guys. I don't know when to when to eat and when to send his kwan is twice.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that's that on the Africa free trade area. Please share your thoughts. I'd love to hear what, you know, people have to say and what they think about that. I'm not optimistic about it in any kind of shape or form. What else is on the cards for today? Mike Coupe, who has come out and declared or registered herself with ZEC as the candidate for the MDC. She's still acting president. They still say acting president, which is weird. I suppose you have to go to a Congress,
because that's the argument is that there's no Congress. So she's going to have to hold a Congress. So I don't know where she's going to find money for that.
Okay.
Or a venue.
Yes.
But
Gutu. Is Gutu still on her side? Is Gutu on her
side? Yeah, Gutu is on her side. And, you know, guys, look, the politics is not, it's tough. And now that we've got Twitter and things like that, it becomes a lot harder to say, you know, maybe some cadres shouldn't be allowed to tweet and be in politics. Kana zvaramba zvaramba, and Obed Gutu is the perfect example of that.
Respect the man.
Where they use brawn, we use brains. Where they use violence, thuggery, and intimidation, we use tact, precision, and strategy. They are populist and excitable. We're thoughtful and calculating. We're on a roll.
Yeah, no, but okay. Let's let's look at the issue at hand. So obviously, Coupe is not happy that Chamisa has basically taken power in the MDC. He is the president of the MDC. That's a fact. He's got the people. Yeah, he's got the system.
It's a fact de jure and de facto is the de jure and de facto leader of the MDC.
Right. So this hasn't sat well with Coupe, and it's obviously been brewing for a very long time. Where's Mudzuri actually? That's just
before. Mudzuri was at Mureo was saying Chamisa chete chete.
So Mudzuri's come back into the fold. He's clearly back into the MDC.
Mudzuri was the one at the meeting that fired Coupe that was saying we should fire. Whereas Chamisa was saying let's give her a chance to come back. And this is from someone that was in the meeting. How strange is that?
I mean, look, it doesn't serve him any. It doesn't serve him well saying that they should fire her. If he can.
So Chamisa was saying send a letter of suspension. The rest of the NCA was like, let's just finish and end this right now. She must go.
I can understand where Chamisa is coming from. If you can bring her back, because you know there's strength in numbers, and you don't want divisions, you don't want fighting, you don't want someone who is with you speaking against you. Because that's exactly what will end up happening. This won't be an MDC Coupe versus ZANU-PF fight. It will become an MDC Coupe versus MDC fight.
MDC,
and then, you know, so you have Coupe coming out at rallies who will say Chamisa is illegitimate. You know, that will be her message. She'll come out and say there was no Congress. I am the one who was elected by the people. And, you know, Chamisa has taken power unofficially or whatever it is.
She's Anna. She had maybe 3 months ago, she had some leg to stand on, but she can't. If the courts of law were to get involved in political issues, which they generally don't, they'll let it play out how it plays out. She really doesn't have a leg to stand on.
She might not have a leg to stand on, but she still has a voice. And I don't think that her voice is going to. I don't know how much of an impact her voice is going to have, but obviously. You just don't want these inconveniences if you are Chamisa.
No, you don't. You want to avoid them at all costs. But it's now out there, and the only thing you can do is ignore her completely. I don't think there's anything else to do. You can't respond. They can't be seen to be responding. Let her go and enjoy her political career.
The only question is how does this impact them, particularly in the Matabeleland region? Everywhere else in Zimbabwe, I don't think she has the juice. I'm just interested to know, you know, how strong she is in her constituency and in that region of Zimbabwe.
She's not as unassailable as she would like to believe, but the reason that the MDC the alliance has been going around doing all these rallies is to re-energize the structures. So the whole point isn't actually about Chamisa's speech, which everyone's focusing on. It's about the week leading up where people are actually, if you look at Jessima Jome's Twitter feed, where people are actually on the ground and my youth are there door to door knocking, re-energizing structures that are existent. What is happening in Matabeleland is basically, particularly in Bulawayo, let's say Bulawayo City, I don't think she has enough, she doesn't have much sway as in the rest of the provinces. They are taking key members away from structures. So let's say maybe there were 10 there. You now have lost your information, your treasurer, your SG in your ward or your district, which is obviously weakening that particular structure and it's the SAL's ability to organize. And the reason why the SAL is so important is because this election, as other elections, but particularly this election, it's polling station based voting. So the most important organ in the party is the SAL. And that's why they're going around with these rallies to reinvigorate these local cells so that when you leave, you can have people on the ground working. And what she's going to do is stop that from happening as effectively as it might happen in, say, you know, Harare or Mash West or Marondera or wherever.
All right. Yeah, no, makes sense. It's interesting to see what happens there and how the MDC takes this and how it goes forward and who goes to which side and what other alliances come out.
But the funny thing isn't she she was with Obed Gutu, Abednego Bebe, and Love Momoyo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obed Gutu, Abednego Bebe were fired. Love Momoyo resigned, right?
Okay.
But who did he write the resignation letter to?
I don't know. It doesn't.
He wrote it to Chamisa.
But shouldn't it have gone to Anonzani? SG? Who's the SG?
SG. As in, he wrote it to SG and Chamisa.
Yeah, I don't know why. If he's resigning, then he accepts that there are two different parties. I don't think.
Whereas
Coupe the problem says is that she still holds the party.
And that's my we have no one has a problem with Coupe going to form her own party.
Yeah.
The problem is what she's going to do and what we've seen and what she wants to do. And this is where it gets ugly, and this is where I'm remiss to speak more passionately about this, so I have to control myself. Is there's about 2.5 million or 1 point people depend between between 2 million and $2.5 million that's owed to the MDC under the Political Parties Finance Act.
Okay.
Right. The reason Coupe won't leave to form her own party
is because,
and will continue claiming that she's the legitimate MDC,
is because
and that Political Party Finance Act is administered by Parliament and ZEC, yes? Mm-hmm. And if you believe, like a lot of opposition people do believe, particularly Parliament, is that it's captured by ZANU-PF, they will do one of two things. Either they will recognize Coupe and give her the money, or we'll say, we don't recognize either of you, so we're going to split it between the two of you. Either way, it takes money away from Chamisa. So whatever her end game is, whatever legitimate grievances she has, whatever anything else happens, ultimately that's where she's really going to harm Chamisa. It's not going to be about what she says in the media about anything. That's ultimately where she's really going to harm his chances at presidency.
Fair enough. Do you think
continues holding on to it like this, and Mudede will do it because he's from ZANU. Not Mudede. What's his name? The Speaker of Parliament. What's his name?
Wow. You know when these things slip your mind, and I can see his face right now.
He's the one that said I resigned. He's the one that read out the resignation letter, man. How can we forget?
Yes.
Jacob.
Jacob, yes. Mudenda.
Yes.
Advocate Jacob Mudenda. Do you think Coupe and Mujuru could team up?
No, I think there's going to be I think that's where she's going. I definitely believe that's where she's going.
A women's party.
Yeah, because it's a sad indication on the patriarchy, and I think if Coupe was a man, she wouldn't necessarily have been treated fairer, but she would likely have found Chamisa earlier, like what happened with Mzuri. But I think you see in PRC right now, Joyce is the presidential candidate. She was vice president in ZANU-PF. She's gone. Lucia Matibenga split from Tendai-Biti's PDP. She's the one representing the split PDP in the PRC. And now Thokozani Coupe, who also was vice president. So they formed a ladies' coalition, for lack of a better word.
It will be interesting to see what happens there. Obviously, we'll keep our eyes on that. And again, if you have any thoughts and comments, please do share. But yeah, I think we can wrap up there.
Yeah, no, we should probably.
Thanks for listening. Obviously, you can find us at Poly and Beyond ZW on Twitter, and Politics and Beyond on Facebook. Share your comments, please.
And join the WhatsApp group. It's InnoFire.
Yeah, join the WhatsApp group. It's actually quite heated. I haven't been following so much. Obviously, been quite busy. But every now and again, I catch some interesting tidbits. It's been interesting to see. The most interesting thing for me to see is how people have changed their political views and positions over the course of the year, or however long that the group has been opened. We've had people who came in and were ZANU-PF
to the death,
and then they moved to different parties. Now they are Chamisa Woye. you know, we've had people who are part of APA, Papi APA.
and now they're running for Bizas.
and now they're running for Bizas. But it's also interesting to see that you have people. You know, people say this. We speak a lot about MDC and ZANU-PF as the biggest, but you do have people within this group who are ardent supporters of other political parties, Biza, APA, and
you know, I actually think the party that's actually underrepresented in a open way is actually ZANU. I found that there's one way ZANU are closeted ZANU supporters. There's very little openly. Since decided to change, but have you noticed that?
I get what you're saying. I think it's a thing of one, the incumbency, and two, the message. To be fair, the message from ZANU-PF isn't clear. And also,
so they have nothing to run with. They have no.
It's not there. I mean, aside from ED as my vote, you know, it's not quite there. And also, you know, it's easy for opposition to speak about the mistakes, whereas it's very difficult. I mean, for ZANU-PF to harp on about its achievements, especially this new administration, especially in the last few months. And it's. Achievements in the tangibles. Yes, we can talk about deals. Yes, we can talk about all these, you know, foreign issues. But in terms of what's actually happening, impacting people's lives or the day-to-day Zimbabwean experience, it's very difficult in that aspect. And also, if we look at the makeup of ZANU-PF, again, in comparison to all the other political parties, it's very old. In terms of its structures, in terms of its leadership. So those are some of the shortcomings, and I think that.
And also, I'm sure Zinod Wadza would be busy tweeting ED as my vote. Zimbabwe is open by business.
That's right, that's right. But yeah, please hit us up. We will be back hopefully next week again. Try to make it a weekly.
Sorry for the erratic recording schedules. We just have 2 masters to get through, so we can come back and enjoy our country under the new dispensation.
Hallelujah, amen.
All right.
Cheers.
All right. Cheers. Bye. And now. Capital 263.